Om sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavitvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om, om. Welcome to our webcast of our Saturday morning class on Shankaracharya's Atma Bodha. We continue in this topic, beginning with verse 31 to 38. I think our current verse is 32, but the topic is Vedantic contemplation. Oh, I have a note here before I forget. This is the holiday season, as they say in India. Many of you are celebrating Navaratri, Vijayadashami, Dasara, and I wish you my best. Happy holidays to you all. And I wish with the pandemic, it's a little hard to celebrate as we usually do. So my thoughts and best wishes go out to you all. Okay. We are discussing Vedantic contemplation. The term I introduced last week is Nididhyasana, is the term we use for Vedantic contemplation. And let's review that topic to introduce today's verses. We discussed how Nididhyasana has a very unique and specific purpose in Advaita Vedanta. The main practice we're engaged in through all of these classes are Shravana and Manana. Remember, Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. These three form the main sadhana, the main spiritual practice of Advaita Vedanta. Shravana, as I explained in a prior class, doesn't merely mean listening, as the word suggests, but instead it means a process of self-inquiry guided by these teachings that you hear from your teacher. So that is Shravana, and that's maybe the main practice we're engaged in, along with Manana, a process of removing doubts. So largely, in our study of Atma Buddha and other texts, our main engagement is in Shravana and Manana, our main practice, self-inquiry guided by these teachings, Shravana and Manana, the process of removing doubts. We bring up many issues and doubts as we go through these verses and address them one by one. The purpose of Nididhyasana is special and unique. And it has to do with the problem of, let's call it habitual identification. Those of you who have studied Vedanta for a long time know this problem very well. And that is, even though the teachings of Vedanta help you discover so vividly and clearly that you are consciousness, a conscious being, Satchidananda Atma, utterly independent of your body, your mind, and your senses, even though you get that with utmost clarity, there's a problem of habitual identification with your body, mind, and senses. We used the lion story in a prior class quite extensively to explain it. If you missed that class, definitely go back and hear that class. Also, let me mention, I produced a video on that lion story. You can find it on my YouTube channel, or I think on last week's video, I included a link to that lion story video. Anyway, that lion story is a very traditional way of explaining the importance and role of Nididhyasana. Let me give you a different example to introduce today's class. The lion story is a famous story. This is not so famous because I think I'm the one who kind of invented this one and use it all, and I've used it quite a bit. here's the issue. You know you are Satchidananda Atma, but you are habitually identified with the body and mind. As I said in the last class, your mind has been under the influence of ignorance for decades and decades. And all of that conditioning won't immediately disappear when you get enlightened. You can gain this knowledge of your true nature, being Satchidananda Atma, and still have so much conditioning in your mind that you continue to identify with your body and mind. And as we've discussed extensively, identification with your body and mind is the cause of suffering. When you identify with your body, the problems of your body become your problems. When you identify with your mind, the problem of your mind become your problems. If you can disidentify, then the problems of your body belong to your body, and it's okay. You deal with it in a pragmatic fashion. Similarly, if there's sadness in your mind, you realize it doesn't truly affect you. It's a problem that belongs to the mind and not to you. Puja Swami Dayananda would say that in this way we turn problems into situations. A problem is something that threatens you. A situation is something you just deal with in a pragmatic way. If you're identified with your body and mind, the illness and difficulties of your problem and body and mind are problems. They affect you. They threaten you, your well-being, your happiness, your contentment. But if you can disidentify completely with your body and mind, then if there's a problem with your body or mind, it's a situation you deal with pragmatically. We've talked about this quite a bit. Let me set that aside. We'll come back to this problem of habitual identification. Another term I used in a prior class was conditioned thinking. Decades of influence of ignorance has conditioned our thinking. We're highly conditioned to identify with our body and mind. We need a process of deconditioning. Nididhyasana is that process of deconditioning. In fact, Puja Swami Dayananda used a very powerful term. He didn't use the term deconditioning. He actually called it dehypnotization. Look at that word. In his view, it is as though we're hypnotized due to ignorance to identify with our body and mind, and we have to dehypnotize ourselves, decondition ourselves, remove that habitual identification. It's crucial, and that's the purpose of Nididhyasana. So, just to introduce today's verses, here's a modern example. The lion story is traditional. Here's a modern story. You already know, based on science classes and our prior classes, you already know that the sun doesn't really go down. We've used this example. You know that we are on a huge globe tilting over backwards while the sun remains stationary in the sky. What you really see each evening is not the sun going down, but the horizon moving up. Due to an optical illusion, we think the sun is moving down when in fact the horizon is moving up. Now, you know that very well. Suppose you go out this evening and watch the sunset. Will you see the horizon going up? Will you feel like you're tilting over backwards? Doubtful. Look at this. Even though you know the sun doesn't truly go down, it looks like it goes down. In terms of your experience, the sun seems to go down, and that is a great example of habitual wrong thinking. The term I used last week, vipadita bhavana, bhavana, a feeling that is viparita, contrary to what you know to be true. When you see the sun going down, that is an experience or a feeling that is contrary to what you know to be true. In the same way, when you habitually identify with your body and mind, that is viparita bhavana. It is a feeling contrary to what you already know to be true. You all already know you are Satchidananda Atma, unborn, uncreated, unchanging consciousness, utterly independent of the body and mind. Now, here's my example of Nididhyasana. Suppose tonight, when the sun is going down, you go outside and watch, or from the comfort of your home, you watch the sun set. As you watch the sun set, you visualize in your mind's eye, you visualize yourself sitting on this planet, this huge ball, rolling over backwards as the sun floats in space without moving. So you know what it looks like. You've seen pictures and movies and all of that. So you just imagine it in your mind. The sun is stationary in front of you. You are on this huge globe tilting over backwards. That's a contemplation of sorts. Suppose you perform that contemplation tonight when the sun goes down. Suppose you do it tomorrow and the next day. Suppose you do it for 40 nights. In the tradition, 40 times, 40 days of practice is an anushtana, a traditional length of practice. So suppose for 40 evenings in a row, you watch the sun set while you perform this contemplation, imagining in your mind that the sun is stationary in the sky. You are on this huge globe tilting over backwards. On the 41st evening, a friend accompanies you at the time of sunset, and your friend says, "What a beautiful sunset." What would be your response? What would you feel watching the sunset? You'd probably correct your friend and say, no, the sun isn't going down. We're tilting over backwards. You'd tell your friend, because after doing this contemplation, this practice for 40 nights, 40 evenings, that sense of the sun going down would be removed. That sense that the sun is actually traveling down through the sky is viparita bhavana. It is an experience or a feeling contrary to what you know to be true. If you did this 40 days, 40 evenings of contemplation, that would be removed to such an extent that on that 41st evening with your friend, you would really have the experience of tilting over backwards. The horizon is moving up. And when your friend said the sun is going down, you'd correct him, because in your experience, the sun isn't going down. The horizon is moving up. This is an example of contemplation, Nididhyasana. You see, its point is to remove this habitual error. Viparita bhavana is habitual error, and that's what we want to remove through a process of contemplation. The current series of verses from verse 31 to 38 has as its topic the removal of viparita bhavana. It is Nididhyasana. We saw the first half of verse 32 in a prior class. Let's return to verse 32. Repeat after me. Amanastva na me dukkha, amanastva na me dukkha, raga dvesha bhayadayah, raga dvesha bhayadayah, aprano hyamana shubhra, aprano hyamana shubhra, ityadi shruti shasanata, Yadi Shruti Shasanata. In the first line, may, you, some of you know as a pronoun, my, for me, of me. And what's significant about that is that it's a pronoun in the first person. We'll see in this whole series of verses, there are all these verses are in the first person. Remember, first person is I, me, ours, etc. Second person is you, yours. Third person, he, she, or it. Theirs, them, etc. Most Vedantic teachings are in the third person. When you say Atma is Satchitananda, that teaching is in the third person. Suppose the teaching is I am Satchitananda. Notice how different those statements are. Most Vedantic teachings, teachings that are engaged in Shravana and Manana, those teachings are generally in the third person. Atma is Satchitananda. That is a third person statement. Here we have a whole series of verses which are grammatically in the first person, like I am Satchitananda. That is indicative of contemplation. These verses are not meant to teach us. They're not meant to teach you what you already know. These verses presume that you've already gotten it. You've already understood these teachings sufficiently well. The purpose of these verses, really speaking, isn't to teach you anything. The purpose of these teachings is, as we said before, to remove habitual wrong thinking, to remove habitual identification with the body and mind, to remove viparita bhavana. And the best way to contemplate is first, in fact, contemplation, nididhyasana, only takes place in the first person. I'll give an example of it. Let's see the verse. At least we'll see the first half of the verse first, and then I'll give you an example of how nididhyasana works and why nididhyasana has to be in the first person. It has to be personal. It can't be abstract. So, verse 31 that we saw in a prior class dealt with nididhyasana with regard to habitual identification with your body and your sense organs. That was in the previous verse. This verse, verse 32, deals with habitual identification with your mind, manas, and your prana, the life force. First half of the verse is actually both. Anyway, we'll see. So first we deal with manas. So it says, may, for me, na dukkha raga dvesha bhayadayaha. For me there is no dukkha, sadness, suffering, no raga, desire, passion, no dvesha, aversion, hate, no bhaya, no fear, no negative emotions or suffering of any kind. Why? First word, amanastvat. Because my nature is amanas, without mind. Very funny. Atma is mindless. Generally, mindless is not a very nice term. But mindless in the sense that Atma consciousness, your consciousness, the consciousness by which you know what's happening right now, that consciousness is utterly independent of the mind. So if there's dukkha in your mind, it belongs to the mind, not to you, Satchitananda Atma. If there is raga in your mind, passion, it belongs to your mind, not to you. If there's dvesha, aversion in your mind, it belongs to your mind, not to you. Bhaya belongs to your mind, not to you. All of the problems of your mind belong to your mind. They don't affect you as pure consciousness. They don't affect you in any way whatsoever. Now, that's a teaching that you've already understood from prior verses. This verse puts it in the first person. It says, for me, there is no raga, dvesha, etc., etc. There are no, all of these problems belong to my mind, amanastvat, because all of these problems belong to my mind. None of them belong to me. None of these problems affect me, in the first person. And that is meant to be used in meditation, in contemplation. In a prior class, I described the connection, the relationship between meditation and contemplation. And what I said was, meditation comes first to prepare you for contemplation. Meditation, dhyana, comes first to prepare you for contemplation, nididhyasana. And the way it works is this. Meditative practices are employed to make your mind quiet. Not just quiet, silent. Not just silent, perfectly silent. But just for a few moments. Don't think this is some great feat that you have to be some great yogi sitting in a cave for years and decades. You don't have to do that. All you need to do is be a sufficiently skillful meditator to make your mind perfectly silent for 1 second. 1 second isn't a long time. It's from between those two taps. That's 1 second. You have a clock ticking. Tick, 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 tick. That's 1 second. You can make your mind quiet for one second, a little short. Tick, tick, tick. Make, call it 3 seconds. I think 1 second isn't quite long enough. 3, 4, 5 seconds is long enough for nididhyasana to be practiced. Let me describe how. In your mind, all kinds of problems. What are those problems? Dukkha, raga, dvesha, bhaya, adayaha, etc. All of these problems are in your mind. Fine. You sit down and meditate, and you use your meditative practice to make your mind really quiet, perfectly quiet, just for those 3, 4, 5 seconds. In those 3, 4, 5 seconds, when your mind is perfectly quiet, just watch. Just see. What is present in those 3, 4, 5 seconds? Before those 5 seconds of silence, all of these problems were present in your mind. In those 5 seconds of total silence, all of those problems are gone, utterly gone. In those 5 seconds of silence, there's no dukkha. There's no raga, dvesha, bhaya. There's no problem whatsoever in those 5 seconds of silence. When those 5 seconds of silence are over and your mind starts thinking again, then you reflect. This is a very important part of contemplation. Step one, actually 3 steps, let me make it very clear. Step one is what is like a sankalpa. You decide what you want to contemplate. It'd be like a leading question. Do the problems of my mind belong to me or not? That's step one. Step two is make your mind perfectly silent for those 3, 4, 5 seconds. That's step two. Then step three is to reflect on that experience of silence. And you say, in those 5 seconds of silence, was there any dukkha? No. Was there any raga, dvesha? No. Any bhaya, any problem of any sort? No. And you recognize that the problems of your mind belong to your mind, and the essence of who you are, consciousness, is utterly free of all those problems, the quality, the problems that belong to the mind. Now, before contemplation, you already knew this. Then why are we doing this contemplation? Remember, to remove habitual wrong thinking. You have to watch that sunset and contemplate 40 times. The lion had to look at that mirror every day. Look in the pond. I tell the story in different ways. The lion had to look at its reflection in the pond again and again to remove the habitual wrong thinking, habitual identification. So this nididhyasana is done repeatedly to remove habitual identification. So the first half is a contemplation, nididhyasana, to remove this habitual identification with the mind. Then the second half, apranaha hi amanaha shubraha iti adi shruti shasanat. Ityadi, thus it is said, shruti shasanat, according to the shasana, according to the teachings of the shruti, of the scriptures, of the Vedas, in particular, in according to the Upanishads, it is said in the Upanishads, last line, it is said in the Upanishads, what is said? Apranaha, my true nature, is free from prana, unassociated with prana. He, indeed, amanaha, amana, same term as in the first line, free from mind, independent of the mind, disconnected from the mind, and shubhra, shining, pure, utterly unaffected by the problems of prana and mind. By the way, iti shruti shasanat, coming, thus says the shruti. Shruti here means Mundaka Upanishad. This is towards the beginning of the second section. I'll just give you the whole verse, just so you get the context. If you want to look it up, this is Mundaka Upanishad 2:1-2. And there are different sections of the Upanishad. Second verse of this of 2.1, where the Rishi says, "Divyaha hi amurtaha purushaha, purusha, the conscious being." The truth of who you are is divyaha, shining consciousness. Amurtaha, formless. That which has no form has no, I would just go through this very quickly. That which has no form has no edge or boundary. Therefore, sa bahya abhyantaraha. It is present bahya, outside, and abhyantaraha, within. It is all pervasive, inside and outside. He, indeed, it is ajaha. I'm breaking up these words. He ajaha. It is aja, unborn. And here's the quote from our Atma Bodha text. That purusha, that conscious being, you, is apranaha, free from prana, independent of prana. He amanaha, free from the mind, independent of mind. Shubraha, shining, pure, utterly unaffected by the defects of prana and mind. And he, indeed, it is aksharat parataha, paraha, a little complicated, beyond everything, beyond the beyond, transcendent. So this is the Mundaka Upanishad, which is quoted by Shankaracharya. And this Mundaka passage is meant for contemplation. How does that contemplation work? Three steps. Well, what are those three steps? First is the habitual identification you want to address. Let's just focus on prana. Since we've already done manas, we'll focus on prana. Prana means life force. Life force, maybe the most concrete way to get that is age and condition of your body. So I've now come to an age where I'm starting to feel older. Now the question is this old age, not that I'm that old, I'm old enough, is old age a problem for me? Does old age affect me, the conscious being, Satchidananda Atma? Step one. Step two, meditate until the mind becomes perfectly silent for just a few seconds. Then step three, to reflect on that silence. And in that silence, Is there any experience of being old? Right now, there's an experience of being old. But in that silence, there's no oldness. There's no age. There's no birth, death. There's no time. So in those moments of silence, nice term that I used in the last class, let me use it again. In those few moments of silence, you have an opportunity to experientially confirm what you've already understood. And that's a really nice definition for Nididhyasana. Contemplation is to experientially confirm what you've already discovered to be true. In those moments of silence, you can experientially confirm that the problems of your mind belong to your mind. In those few moments of silence, you can experientially confirm that the age of your body belongs to your body and doesn't affect you at all. Okay, let's continue. Nirguno nishkriyo nityo, nirguno nishkriyo nityo, nirvikalpo niranjanaha, nirvikalpo niranjanaha, nirvikaro nirakaro, nirvikaro nirakaro, nitya muktosmi nirmalaha, nitya muktosmi nirmalaha. Just so I don't forget, last line, you see the word asmi hidden in the middle of it. Asmi, I am. My point being, this verse also is in the first person. Third person is used for teaching. And second person. If I say Atma is Satchidananda, that's a third person teaching. If I say you, your true nature is Satchidananda, no, you are Satchidananda, that's a second person teaching. Atma is Satchidananda, third person. You are Satchidananda, second person. But I am Satchidananda, first person, meant for Nididhyasana. So the verb in the last line, asmi, I am, in the first person. I am what? Even if you don't know Sanskrit, you can probably pick out something that's happening in the verse. You see the prefix nir again and again. The prefix nir actually has several meanings, but often it means without. So look at how many times that prefix nir comes here. Nirgunaha, without gunas. Nir and nir becomes nish before kriya. Nishkriyaha, without action. Nirvikalpa, without vikalpa. Niranjanam, without anjana. I'll explain all these words in a moment. Nirvikara, without vikara. Nirakara, without akara. Nirmalaha, last word, without mala. Just to point out, all of these words of negation, and that's really significant. We discussed in the prior section, the prior portion of this text, dealt with about Atma being self-revealing. Atma is self-revealing, but as we discussed at great length, you don't need to discover Atma in the sense that Atma is already present here and now in this ordinary experience. Atma is present as the Atma is present as the consciousness or awareness by which you know what's happening right now, what's happening around you outside, what's happening inside your mind. All of that is known to you due to consciousness, awareness. That consciousness is Atma. There is no other Atma except that consciousness. But the problem is, Atma, even though that consciousness is self-revealing, the true nature of that consciousness is unknown. Not only the true nature of that consciousness being unborn, uncreated, unchanging, boundaryless, limitless, all-pervasive, the true nature of that consciousness is unknown. And since you don't know the true nature of your consciousness, then you superimpose wrong things upon your consciousness. If you don't know your consciousness is changeless, then you superimpose sadness on your consciousness. I became sad. I was happy yesterday, and I'm sad today. Not knowing your consciousness to be changeless, you superimpose so many wrong conclusions are superimposed on Atma. In fact, when you say, and just a funny observation, a three-word sentence, I am, and then a blank, fill in the blank. I am whatever. Whatever you put in that third word is almost always a superimposition. If you say, I am Swami Tadatmananda, consciousness isn't Swami Tadatmananda. If I say, I am a man, no, body is male. If I say, I am a teacher, well, this individual person is a teacher, not consciousness. If I say, I am old, no, body is old, not consciousness. You get the idea. In that statement, I am, fill in the blank, anything you fill in that blank is wrong. Therefore, all of those wrong conclusions have to be negated. All of those wrong conclusions about self-revealing consciousness have to be negated. That's why all the negation in this verse, negation, negation, negation. Vedanta, the technical term is nisheda paraha. Vedanta is primarily in the form of nisheda, negation. So what are the negations here? Let's go through the verse. Nirgunaha, free from gunas. Guna means attribute. Attributes like happiness and sadness, well, those attributes belong to your mind, or attributes like age belong to your body, but not to consciousness. Consciousness is nirgunaha, free from the attributes of the body and mind, unaffected by the attributes of the body and the mind. Sadness affects the mind, age affects the body, neither sadness or age affects consciousness. Nirgunaha. Nishkriyaha, free from action. I said before, consciousness is unchanging. Nishkriyaha can be translated as unchanging. Your body is constantly changing, your mind is constantly changing. Changing means up and down, right? Some days you feel better, some days you feel worse. Atma doesn't have a good day or a bad day. For consciousness, every day is perfect. No ups and downs. Nishkriyaha, changeless. Nityaha, eternal. Even the word eternal, actually it sounds like a positive word, but on examination, even a positive word like eternal is negative in sense. Eternal means what? Unborn, uncreated, not subject to death, decay, destruction. So even a word like nitya really is a word of negation. Your body is born. Your body decays, dies. Consciousness is ageless, unchanging. Nirvikalpa. Vikalpa means a modification. That which changes is a vikalpa. Vikalpa can also mean thought. All of these changing conditions here belong to your mind. I just mentioned the ups and downs. Happy one day, sad the next day. Not for Atma. Atma being nirvikalpa, free from any changes, free from any mental conditions, and similarly, niranjana. Anjana is that which colors is anjana, that which causes a tainting, that which, in this context, that which causes impurity or stain. Anjana has other meanings as well. But here, niranjana, literally stainless, uncolored, ultimately it means unaffected. Whatever affects your body and mind doesn't affect consciousness. Consciousness is niranjana. It is utterly unaffected by the problems of the body and mind. Nirvikaraha in the third line. Vikara is a change. I mentioned age. So body is constantly aging, constantly undergoing change. Mind also is constantly undergoing change. Not consciousness. How do you know, just to be very simple about it, how do you know your body is aging? How do you know your mind is happy or sad? All of this is known to you, the conscious being, and as we said many classes ago, only an unchanging observer can observe external changes. The example I gave is if you are moving at the same pace, what is the example I gave? If you're walking down the road, the example I gave was a car. If you're driving down the road, remember this? I had to remember it just now. If you're driving your car on the freeway at 60 miles an hour, and you look over into the next car, the car that's driving next to you, and you see a fellow in the car drinking coffee, that fellow is drinking coffee at 60 miles an hour. You don't see him drinking coffee at 60 miles an hour because you are also driving at 60 miles an hour. In order to experience him drinking coffee at 60 miles an hour, you have to be a stationary observer on the side of the road. In the same way, in order to observe the changing conditions of your body and mind, you are necessarily an unchanging observer. This is the essence of who you are, unchanging consciousness, nirvikaraha. Also, nirakara. Many of you know akara as form. Your body has akara, form. Your mind has some kind of form. Consciousness has no form. And being formless has no edge, no boundary, no limit. And that which has no limits is limitless. We'll look at an application of Nididhyasana in just a moment. Let's finish the verse first. The last word, nirmalaha, without mala. Mala is impurity. Mind has plenty of impurities. Body has its problems. Atma, nirmalaha, absolutely free from those problems. The word that I left for last is a little interesting. Little. It's very significant. Nitya muktaha. Mukta means free. Nitya mukta, eternally free. Remember that the goal of Vedanta is moksha or mukta. There are synonyms. Moksha means liberation, freedom. Mukti means liberation, freedom. So here, Shankara is saying that you are nitya muktaha asmi, he says in the first person. For meditation, for contemplation, asmi, I am nitya muktaha, eternally free. Well, in what sense? The body is certainly not free from aging. Mind is certainly not free from its ups and downs. What is eternally free, liberated, is Atma, your true self, your essential nature. And here's the irony. The irony is, I think we discussed this at least once before, the irony of spiritual life is for Satchidananda Atma, for your true self, Vedanta is useless. Nitya Muktaha, your true self is eternally free. Your true self doesn't need moksha, doesn't need liberation, doesn't need a guru, doesn't need scriptures, doesn't need anything. Nitya Muktaha. But the one who needs the scriptures and a guru, the one who needs Vedanta, is not Atma. It's the individual person. We used the word jiva before. Jiva needs Vedanta, not Atma. Does not need Vedanta, Atma being Nitya Muktaha. Now, just very briefly here, how to use this verse for contemplation. In fact, each one of these words in this verse is meant to be used as an independent contemplation. I just suggest that at how that would work. Remember, the contemplation has three steps. One is what you want, the particular kind of habitual identification you want to address. Second is the meditation and silence. And third is the reflection. These three steps are present for Nididhyasana. So let's look at some examples. Nirgunaha, guna, attribute. So step one is a question. Do the attributes of my body and mind truly affect me, consciousness? Step one. Step two, 5 minutes of silence brought about by meditation. Step three is the reflection. In those 5 seconds of silence, was there any presence at all of the attributes of the body and mind? And what you reflect on and what you see very vividly is that in those 5 seconds of silence, there are no gunas, no qualities, no attributes at all. Atma being nirgunaha. Then nishkriyaha, the changes, the activities of your body and mind. In the 5 seconds of silence, you discover Atma's nishkriyaha. In the 5 seconds of silence, you discover Atma's nityaha, unborn, uncreated. You discover consciousness as nirvikalpaha. Again, in those moments of silence, you discover Atma's niranjanaha, untainted by the problems of the body and mind. In that silence, you discover Atma's nirvikaraha, utterly unchanging. Nice meditation. In those moments of silence, after the silence is over, you ask yourself, did anything change? In those 5 seconds of silence, you discover in that silence, you are present as the awareful observer, Sakshi, right? Who's aware of the silence? You are aware of the absence of mental activities, the absence of vrittis. You are aware of that silence. So you are very much present as that Sakshi, awareful witness. And as you are witnessing that silence, are you witnessing anything changing? You don't witness any change whatsoever. Therefore, you discover Atma's nirvikaraha, nirakara, wonderful for contemplation. Akara, form. You definitely have this habitual identification. This is me. This is the edge of me. I exist here and no further. But then in those 5 seconds of silence, is there any sense of edge or boundary or even any sense of location? This is very sophisticated. In that silence, do you experience any sense of location? Do you experience any sense of being confined or inside a body? That's all gone, absolutely gone. What a wonderful contemplation. And nirmalaha, also for all of this is to be seen in contemplation. Let's see one more verse. Excuse me.
Aham akashavat sarvam bahirantargatochyutah bahirantargatochyutah sada sarvasama siddho sada sarvasama siddho nissango nirmalo chalah nissango nirmalo chalah.
The very first word, aham, I, first person pronoun. You'll see this verse after verse. These verses are in the first person. These verses are meant for nididhyasana contemplation. Excuse me. Sorry. Look at the, start in the last line. Nissangaha nirmalaha achalaha. More negation. The negation that began in the prior verse, verse 33, is continued here in verse 34. Nissangaha, free from sangha, literally free from attachment, but that's not a very helpful. Literally, nissanga means free from attachment. Well, what does that mean, unattached? Free from relationship, and free from relationship in the sense of unaffected. I made that observation in last week's class. Nisangaha, utterly unaffected. No sangha, no connection, no relationship to the body and mind. If there's no relationship to body and mind, the problems of the body and mind belong to body and mind and not to you. Nisangaha. Independent, detached, unaffected. Nirmalaha. And achala. Nirmala, the word came in the prior verse. Achala is the same as nishkriya. Nishkriya, motionless, literally motionless. Achala also means motionless. What I'm pointing out is repetition. And the reason I'm pointing it out is repetition is considered a defect in teaching. If a teacher says the same thing over and over again, or a text says the same thing over and over again, repetition is considered a defect when teaching. You see the distinction I'm making? Are these verses for the sake of teaching you what you don't know, or are these verses for the sake of contemplating what you already know? You see the distinction? If these verses were teaching in the third person, repetition would be a defect. These verses are not to teach you. You already know that consciousness is nirmalaha. You already know that consciousness is achalaha, unchanging. So you already know it. These words are not to teach you. These words are repeated for the sake of nididhyasana. And 40 days, you have to watch the sunset. The lion has to see its reflection again and again. Nididhyasana requires repetition. So here, repetition is not a defect at all. Now we can make a transition here. The prior verse and this last line is all negation. When you negate and negate and negate and negate, something has to be left. Otherwise, you end up in Buddhism, this shunyavada, the nihilism is the English word, utter non-existence. If there's only negation, 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 then you end up in total non-existence. Wait a minute, consciousness exists. You exist as a conscious being. That you exist as a conscious being is non-negatable. Everything else is negatable. Your existence as a conscious being is non-negatable. So after all the negation of the prior verse and the last line here, what remains is that which is non-negatable. What is that non-negatable reality that remains? Back up to the top, aham, I, my true nature as unborn, boundaryless consciousness is sarvam, aham sarvam. I am everything. Everything in what sense? I am bahir antargataha. I am bahir gataha. I am outside. I am antargataha. I am inside. It's an expression for being all pervasive, boundaryless, limitless. Aham, I am sarvam, everything. I am bahir antargataha. I am all pervasive. Akashavat, like space. I am all pervasive like space. Your body is confined in time and space. Consciousness is not confined by time and space. Consciousness has no edge, no boundary, no limit, formless, as we said before. That which is formless has no edge or boundary. That which has no edge or boundary has no limit, demarcation. That which has no limit is limitless, all-pervasive. And achyutaha, not subject to decay. Body is decaying. We know that very well. Atma being unchanging, consciousness being unchanging, it is not subject to decay. And finally here, sada, sarvasamaha, sada always, sarvasama. And the commentator makes a very nice interpretation of this. Sarvasama means just equal in all situations. And the commentator says, no matter how bad the situation might be, consciousness is sama, the same, undisturbed. That which is undisturbed in that which is sama, undisturbed in sarva, in all situations, sada, all the time. Lovely expression. That which is sama, undisturbed, sarva, in all situations, sada, all the time. And that which is siddha, here siddha means perfect. All of these words are now positive expressions to describe Atma. We just got done with all the negation. Now we have these positive words asserting the nature of Atma. The nature of Atma being all pervasive. The nature of Atma being undecaying, although that's more, undecaying is really a negative word. Even all pervasive has a negative side to it. Free from limit, free from form, free from edge or boundary. Maybe the most positive words here are sarvasamaha and siddha. Siddha, perfect. By the way, there's another version of the text which instead of siddha has shuddha. Shuddha means pure. So whether you use the word siddha, perfect, or shuddha, pure, these are words referring to the nature of Atma, which is sada sarva samaha. I like that expression. Atma being samaha, always the same, utterly undisturbed, sarva in all situations, sada at all times. And just we'll conclude now, just to show how these, again, each of these words are meant to be used for contemplation. And here's how. We'll just take that last part. Sada sarva samaha, always undisturbed in all situations. So in contemplation, here we are in the midst of this pandemic, which has killed so many people and which has disturbed everyone's lives, your life, my life. Everything has been disturbed badly by this pandemic. So step one of contemplation is to ask the question, has this pandemic affected me in a fundamental way? Is my true nature as consciousness affected in any way by all of this, all of the problems and difficulties brought about by the pandemic? Then that's step one. Step two, meditation, dhyana, making the mind quiet for several moments. Then step three, in those moments of silence, was there any experience of the consequences of the pandemic? Did any of the consequences of the pandemic carry over into those few moments of silence, those few moments of silence in which I alone exist in my true nature, independent of body, mind, world, all these external things? And what you discover is in those few moments of silence, you are utterly unaffected by the pandemic. This is the purpose of contemplation, is to see the truth of yourself through, we use the expression in the last class, to use the teachings of Vedanta as a word mirror, to see yourself through the lens of Vedanta, to see your true nature reflected in the words of Vedanta, but to see that truth again and again and again for the sake of removing this habitual wrong identification, habitual wrong thinking, viparita bhavana. That's the purpose of nididhyasana. There are several more verses left on this topic of nididhyasana. We'll see that in our next class. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om tat sat.